This is the Freedom Thieves, broadcasting from Pod B, 2A, a mile above sea level, at Intergalactic Ready Studios. We alter your locus coeruleus by warming your synapses with rejuvenative radio waves. This warms your brain to a tasty and toasty 365 degrees Fahrenheit to keep a sinful of statism out of your head. Can you feel it? Can you feel it? Is it working, Randy England?
Yes, yes, I am here. I am in Pod Bay 2B, only about 780 feet above sea level, but I'm here. I can feel it. And I haven't been contacted by the government yet. But, Oh, wait a minute. Oh, that was
is that the government?
Never mind. It was. Well, there were no markings. I can't be sure. But what do you think? So this is the Freedom Fiends, and Freedom Fiends is covered by a BIPCOT no government license, which allows reuse by anyone except government. So learn more at BIPCOT.org.
Absolutely.
And it's not just for radio shows anymore.
That's for everything now, isn't it?
Lou Sanderfien has his assault kitchen licensed by the BIPCOT, no government license. I saw, I think the perhaps the Fiji booth up at the Michigan, the Midwest Peace and Liberty Fest may have also been likewise licensed. So it's spreading, and also the Stateless Salsa vendor, I believe, also had that up there. So it's a common thing, and I really encourage everyone to use it. It almost makes me want to write another book or something, just so I could have one. But this broadcast will do for right now. So how have you been, Dan?
I've been good. How have you been, Randy? It's been a while since we spoke.
It has been a while, and you had your lovely wife with you the last time that we spoke. Hey, you're in Scotland. I think a lot of people know that by now, or maybe guess. I mean, they either think you're from Scotland or like, you know, one of the Beatles has come back. But are there any more, you know, moves in your part of the world in this thing you were doing about seceding from the UK a while back that we heard about?
Well, that's actually quite interesting because it went a bit quiet after the referendum, and obviously the referendum was quite close. But since then, like the main party, the Scottish National Party, who were the sort of driving force behind it, they're still, you know, currently, you know, well, the last election basically was kind of insignificant. It was the last UK election, but they got a massive amount of members of parliament elected. Their best result ever, basically, in a Westminster election. And there is all these things now. You're starting to find other groups popping up because they're the sort of main group, but they've played it down whether they would have another referendum or not. But some people think if they win the Scottish elections next year, then there's a good chance that they'll try and bring it up again. Don't know yet, but there is all these other sort of smaller sort of offshoot groups starting to come up now. There's even a newspaper started here that's kind of it's called The National, and it's just a newspaper with a pro-independent slant, so it's not going away. Like, people are still thinking about it, and there's a lot of people that still want to see it happen.
Well, from a liberty standpoint, do you have any hope for this, or is there any point to it at all?
Well, see, I've always been conflicted with it because, I mean, the plan proposed for Scottish independence by the Scottish National Party was, I mean, they're very socialist and they're a very authoritarian party. Like, they're basically the most authoritarian party in Britain. There's some articles that have described why. So I like the idea of, but that's where my confliction sort of came in, because I like the idea of Scotland being independent, you know, and moving away from, you know, to as small a government as possible just now. But then the problem was, what are we moving into, you know, because it seemed like it was going to go a bit hyper-socialist if it had happened at that time. But then I started to go back and forward and thinking, well, how long would the socialism and the handouts really last, to be honest? You know, would that end up being a good thing, because you would need to let it break? You know, I don't know. I was kind of going back and forward. I mean, I eventually decided to vote yes to independence, and I did, and I've said that loads of times, but I wasn't keen on the kind of social. I agreed on the idea of seceding. The bit where I disagreed was what to do afterwards, basically.
So you, but you're not sure whether this is just setting you up to get flushed down a smaller toilet instead of the one you're in.
Well, the weird thing about it was, I mean, the Scottish National Party were saying, yeah, let's secede from this Westminster government and let's make our own decisions. However, we'll stay in the European Union. And you were like, well, what doesn't make any sense? Let's leave one government but stay in the bigger one that we're already a part of, that already makes massive amounts of our laws. So it seemed ridiculous. I mean, that's why I was arguing at the time that it wasn't really independence they were talking about, if you, you know, if you really think about it, because unless you were going to leave the European Union also, then what are you really independent from? Just Westminster? You just get some more powers. You don't have all the powers you need.
Right. I suppose there is always an appeal to have to be under a smaller government, even if it's only smaller in terms of the number of people that it rules. I don't know, maybe it makes you feel like you have more of a say if you're 1 in 10 million instead of 1 in 100 or something, right? Yeah. I mean, it's silly because a city government can be just as tyrannical as a national government. I mean, anybody that's ever been to a city council meeting knows that. But still, it is tempting. At least you feel like you're a little bit more, I don't know, a little bit more free. Kind of like I would feel if our federal government somehow disappeared tomorrow. I would still have hundreds of jackasses up here in the state capitol, but I would still think that I would probably say, yeah, let's do that. You know, we'll deal with our jackasses here, and forget about the ones in Washington, D.C. I guess that'd be all right. So, yeah, I vote yes, too. I'm with you on that, even though I don't know how it would turn out.
I mean, it conflicted a lot of libertarians that I know. I mean, I was even talking to sort of people I know in England and stuff like that, and everyone had a different opinion on this. You know, probably I would say most of the people I spoke to were probably thought that secession, you know, in Scotland's case was a good thing. But there was particularly some people I know in England that weren't so keen on it. It's funny, it really kind of split people down the middle with a lot of libertarians I know, just because it was that way where there was no real libertarian option, if you know what I mean. It's either just stay the way things are with this, you know, government in England, or say yes, but then potentially risk living in, you know, some Scottish National Party socialist dystopia, you know what I mean?
Yes.
Not an easy choice.
Well, anyway, I thought I would just ask you about that because I hadn't had a chance to talk with you for a while, and I wondered what was happening over there. You know, we were talking before the show, I guess it was, and about some issues on about property rights, and not what they are today with the state, but like if we could fast forward to a time when we didn't have a state. You know, what would happen with immigration. And there was an article, I think it was on the blog Bionic Mosquito, which the fellow that runs that, and I don't even know what his name is. I think he refers to himself as Bionic. And in that, he's talking about a debate between Walter Block and I think it was, who was it?
Is it Hoppe?
Well, Hoppe and Murray Rothbard, the positions of Hoppe and Murray Rothbard, and perhaps also Stephen Kinsella, and pointing out that, you know, these are all really smart, respected guys in the libertarian movement. Well, Rothbard's not in it, but he's almost the father of it, in a sense. And that Block takes a different position from Hoppe, Kinsella, and Rothbard on the issue of whether immigration, open borders, shall we say, should be allowed before we reach a stateless society where there's no government. And Hoppe, Kinsella, and Rothbard apparently all thought that it was appropriate to have some controls. And Block says, heck no, you know, just forget the borders and let them in. And talked about, Block's scenario would be when if Robinson Crusoe was on an island and then Friday arrived, could Crusoe bar Friday from cultivating unused land on the other side of the island, because Crusoe claims the entire island as his own. He's kind of like the government at the time Friday arrives and says, it's all mine. And but Crusoe just hasn't gotten around to doing anything with it. And Block says that, you know, this just isn't a legitimate claim on Crusoe's part, and says this is unowned land, and that Crusoe can't claim it if he's not improving it or doing something with it or actually occupying it. And, you know, that seems to make a lot of sense. I don't know. What do you think about it?
I don't know. I mean, I feel like I understand like the basics of that, but immigration is something I go back and forward on, because I feel that it's so much more complex. Like the way I kind of like, I know I hear a lot of sort of libertarians shouting about like open borders and things like that, and you know, I kind of think, you know, it's fair enough to say that, but in a stateless world, I think that would be simpler and that would be a preferred option. However, in this world we do live in right now with like states and like especially welfare programs and things like that, then I don't think you can just say like, let's just let everyone in and let's have just completely unrestricted immigration, because I just think it'll end up in disaster, personally.
And I think that was part of the point that the author of the post, my friend Bionic, was trying to make, that without the that there would probably end up being massive property destruction and riots and things like that. And his main point was not that that would happen and that was a bad thing, although it certainly would be a bad thing, but that would cause the government to clamp down and we would move further from liberty, and above all, we do not want to do things that move us further from liberty. Mm-hmm. And you know, who would disagree with that?
I mean, it makes sense when you think about it, because like, I mean, it is, again, it's the whole government's thing. With governments make it basically impossible to have free movement. I mean, unless you've got some sort of really minimal state or something, because, you know, if you're going to have welfare and things, you're going to have problems when more people come in.
And we'll be back in just a few minutes from the market.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends, tasing you with liberty since 2011. Learn more at freedomfiends.com.
Wake up and smell the freedom. One of the easiest things you can do to help liberty is to torrent Freedom Fiends episodes to help keep them drone-proof. You can set up your home computer to download and share Freedom Fiends archives over BitTorrent. You can even set up scheduling so it only shares while you're asleep or at work. Put your unused computing power to work and help keep the Freedom Fiends around well into the future. Simply go to freedomfiends.com and click on the Torrent Club link and learn how to torrent and share Freedom Fiends archives.
This is the Freedom Fiends. And we are back from the Agora. This is Randy England, and I'm with Dan Green here this evening, or this morning, I should say, depending on where you are. And just talking with Dan, we were talking about immigration. And Dan, you know, you live in Scotland, and the problems there are probably different than the problems that we see here, or at least what the press tells us we have with immigration here. Would you anticipate any problems if Scotland, were to just throw open the borders to all comers? In the current situation, would that be bad or good?
I think it would be bad. You know, we have had, there's been recent stories in like the news here, a lot of like sort of migrants in France trying to sort of storm the security fences and stuff at the Channel Tunnel, trying to get, you know, into the UK
on the French side, is
on the French
right?
side, yeah, Yeah, trying to get into the UK. Basically, they've slowed down trains and things. There's been a lot of trouble recently down there.
It's hard to imagine anything dumber. I'm sorry, I don't mean disrespect, but to storm a tunnel that's underwater. I mean, there's so many things that could go wrong with that, right? And the people in the UK, whether it would be you or the England, or is that what you call the people down there with Westminster and that? Is that England?
Yeah, that's
as opposed to Scotland. Okay, well, the people in England,
government.
They're not stupid people. I mean, they probably know about gates and that, and they probably have one on their side of the tunnel. So I'm just thinking, if Hitler wants to invade through the tunnel channel, what do you call it? Channel, is that it?
Channel tunnel.
The channel tunnel. If anybody wants to invade that way, they need another plan. But anyway, I'm sorry, I interrupted you, but go ahead. They're having, is it Calais? Is that where
Calais.
They, yeah, you come over on the French side? Okay.
Yeah.
And go ahead, I'm sorry.
I was going to say, the thing is, though, I'm that way where, you were asking, what would happen if we say we did open the gates and things, and I'm a bit wary because I know that, for example, sometimes I know a lot of kind of sort of lefty people, and I'll sort of say things about immigration, you need to have it at a level, you can't just have open borders and things. And then some people will say, well, what about your family? Because sort of my family came to Scotland from Ireland in the sort of 40s. And at that time, they were treated like a lot of, say, immigrants from Romania or something might be treated now here, not very well in terms of a lot of the public's perception of them. So some people go, well, your family were immigrants and all this kind of thing. So I know I'm a bit kind of wary about that. But for example, we have areas here that are just now, we have we have immigrants from a lot of places. We just now have, there's an area near me that's got a lot of Romanian immigrants, and even it's just the social problems in that area are massive right now. There's all sorts. I'm not trying to tattle Romanians with one brush here. I'm just saying, in that particular area, the way, all these people are sort of squeezed in that, and a lot of people you kind of find are here trying to avoid things. I know they're trying to sort of hide out a bit, if you will. And there's massive social problems in that area. It's just that it's not a great place to be. Crime rates shot through the roof. And I'm not saying that's the immigrants' fault, but I'm saying they're coming into this country that's in the state it's in because there's a government, because it is a state, and that's sort of what I was saying a bit before the break. That's why we can't have this unrestricted movement, because when you've got these governments in place, and again, I know I keep saying welfare and stuff, but it's true. I mean, you have immigrants coming to different countries and, then government paying, them handouts and welfare. I'm not saying people just walk into countries and automatically get welfare, but you do get things like this. And it's just the fact that there is a state and it's enclosed in that way. That's what I think would make, that's the biggest problem to free movement.
Over here, we're having our presidential election is starting to gear up in that. And Donald Trump, who is apparently the front runner in the Republican Party, has said that our biggest numbers of illegal immigrants are Mexicans. And he's declared that they are murderers and rapists. And I wonder if in Scotland, Romanians, do they bring, anyone claim that they're bringing vampires with them? Because that would be what I would be thinking of. The Count Dracula wasn't he from there?
Yeah.
Well, we'll talk about it when we come back.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. Go to freedomfiends.com to help keep it drone-proof.
When you shop online, please do it through the Freedom Fiends Amazon link over on the right side of freedomfiends.com. It won't cost you any extra, and the fiends will get a little taste from Amazon, and Amazon will save you the danger of drive-by stabbings at your local mall. Amazon sells pretty much everything you can buy on this earth, except for guns and weed. but they do sell the DVD Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. So get that for your gun-hating stoner brother or neocon gun nut dad. They'll thank you for it. That's freedomfiends.com. Freedom, Foxtrot, Echo, Echo, November, Sierra.com.
Freedom Fiends. I'm Dan Green, I'm talking to Randy England, and we are talking about immigration. I was kind of before the break talking a little bit about how I don't believe that we can really have proper free movement when we've got kind of big governments about, and I feel like I kind of know what I want to say, but so to get it across properly, I mean, I don't want to misspeak as well. I'm kind of cautious of misspeaking because I know that this has been contentious, because I know that some things have changed recently in the UK, in regards to when people can access sort of the welfare system when they just come to this country, and I'm not totally up on what the changes are, so I don't want to misspeak on that issue, but we were talking about it a bit, and the kind of thing I think about this whole thing is, I mean, we kind of get, I know that Randy, in the US you kind of get health tourism, but in the US it's more like people sort of going there so they can pay someone to do something quicker, like pay a doctor to get their procedure done a lot faster, whereas
from Canada.
Yes, I've heard that, yeah. The difference is health tourism here is often people from other countries trying to, you know, to come to this country to access the sort of quote-unquote free national health service. So it kind of takes on a different meaning here because, here it's basically free at the point of use, you know. So that's a big issue. I mean, that's the other problem. When you've got something like a national health service, and if you, open the gates to lots of, say, immigrants, and, I mean, a lot of people will come to places like the UK, absolutely. I mean, once you do that, then it puts more strain on things like the National Health Service and stuff like that, because there's so, you know, it can't keep up with demand. And that's the problem, because I think, in a way, government, the way with government have stuff like, because they have control of the health service, kind of adds a scarcity, because, you know, because it's only their hospitals and their doctors, and, you know, there is some private, you know, hospitals here, but they're just basically supplements to the National Health Service. So once you have things like that, and then you have an influx, you can't have a big influx of people because, you know, it's so restricted, you're not going to have, then the services and things are going to get worse. And, you know, then maybe you could make the argument that may be a good thing, because then it might get, you know, the NHS might finally crash or something. But, you know, it's one of those things where if people come, they're going to have to live somewhere, they're going to have to eat somehow, you know, and a lot of the time it's either going to be, government handouts, crime, or, you know, low-paying jobs. And it's just the way it is. I mean, I don't know what you think, Randy.
I assume that they have big arguments in Parliament about controlling immigration. Is that fair? Is that right?
They do, but it's mostly the party that are really kind of up on their high horse about immigration, or the United Kingdom Independence Party, or UKIP, you might have heard of. Immigration's one of their big issues. I mean,
well, is there somebody that, is there a party, though, that wants to let lots of immigrants in, and other parties that don't?
They would never say it like that, but it's like some are more relaxed on it. I mean, under the New Labour, the Tony Blair government, that's when immigration into this country absolutely soared. So they were very much in favour of it. Actually, this is interesting. Just a side note before I forget this. You mentioned the Scottish independence thing before. And what some people were kind of talking about there was the plan afterwards was, you know, based on a lot of free stuff from the government, but there wasn't going to be enough tax money to actually pay for it. So the Scottish National Party were going to have to rely on immigrants coming in and actually working for that, you know, for their kind of plans to have been realised.
To add to the tax base.
Basically.
Yeah. yeah, I see what you're saying, that the parties, one side doesn't say, oh, we want them all to come, and then somebody says somebody may say they don't. In the United States, you have the Republicans who say, we don't want them. And then we have the Democrats who kind of mumble around and act like they don't care because they don't care because they believe that most of the immigrants are going to be good voting Democrats. And so the Democrats, they don't say it out loud because they don't think it would get a lot of traction, even among the Democratic voters. But they don't talk about, they don't really want to end the illegal immigration, but the Republicans certainly do. So I guess I see what you're saying there. But when they have the debates, though, if the argument for not allowing people into the borders is that they'll come in and drain us dry in our welfare state, whether it would be health or who cares, food stamps, I don't know. Surely that somebody, you know, steps up and says, well, what if you couldn't get the food stamps or the free health care if you weren't legal? I mean, would that, or what if you couldn't get it unless you were here just so long, and if you wanted to come here, you needed to at least be able to support yourself. You need to come here and work. I mean, any government could say that, right? Mm-hmm. And I mean, that would solve that problem if they close those loopholes. People gripe about it and say, oh, these people come in and they fill up our schools and we have to pay for it and they do this and that. I'm not saying I believe that. I think that I don't know about the UK, but most of the immigrants to the United States come here to work and they add to the tax base, and very likely I will soon be in the Social Security system myself, and I've done my bit. I've got four kids and they're grown, so they're paying into it. You know, I feel like I've done my part, but the U.S. Social Security system going down the drain, and one thing that will probably keep it alive longer than it would have lived is the huge number of workers that are coming up from Mexico, because these people come here to work. And they eventually, you know, they're paying taxes, and it's going to save the Social Security system for a while, or keep it from hitting the wall sooner. And I don't know how many of the politicians, you know, think about that. I don't think they would mention it. But you know, our birth rate in this country is not that high. I think yours is probably lower in the UK and worse in some places in Europe. Isn't that right?
I would imagine so. I know I think it's quite low.
And so you have all these people who are, you know, sucking off the government one way or the other, and there aren't enough young people, enough workers to keep that stream running. You know, in the back of the rulers' minds, they have to see, as you pointed out, the immigrants as a source of income rather than a drain on the economy, and they have it in their power for it not to be a drain, but to be a source of income. I don't know what they're doing behind the scenes, but if I was a statist and was in there running the numbers and everything, I think I would probably want to say, hey, if they want to work, let them come. You know, of course, I'd get voted out of office, so you can't win. You know, so you have to just do insane things and say insane things, like accusing, you know, Mexicans are being murderers and rapists, which is so, so stupid. I mean, that is so far from the truth. You know, all the years that I spent as a prosecutor, my experience with, you know, Hispanic immigrants and illegal immigrants was that they seemed to keep their heads down a lot better than our everyday garden variety American criminals. And it seemed to me that there was almost a culture of the immigrant culture. It was almost like everybody that came over must have got sat down and got a lecture and saying, you're going to keep your head down, you're not going to get in trouble, and if you do, we will deal with you, and if you think what that prosecutor is going to do to you is bad, wait till we get a hold of you. Because they really, really do try and keep their heads down and not, you know, stick it up there where they're going to get bashed. So I don't think that the crime rate, among, in my experience, is as bad. I think native-born Americans are doing more than their share of the crime in this country. So I don't know. I don't think that's a very good argument. The crime argument's not a good one. the issue of welfare seems like, you know, that's kind of like shooting yourself in the foot. You say, well, I'll let you in, but I'm going to force myself, you know, it's like opening the front door of your house and telling somebody they can have a room for the night. And then when they get in there, you say, well, I guess I have to let you stay forever. I have to feed you too, you know. I'm thinking, why do I have to do that? But it seems like they act like we have to. I don't know. The government is constantly doing things. They mess one thing up, and then the answer to every problem that they create, of course, is to make another law to try and correct the original problem. You know, it's like the word repeal is not in their dictionary. You know, you mentioned one other thing, and it wasn't just about the welfare state, the problems that you saw with an open immigration in a state, a society that is not yet free and that has controlled borders. And by the way, I think we established early on that you are on the side of Rothbard and Hoppe and Kinsella on this rather than Block, right? But
more to
some
that.
Other things that we don't have as strong as sensibilities about in the United States, and that is, dangerous political groups. Do you see that factoring into this?
We see movements and stuff like that as well. I don't kind of want to sound like I'm anti-immigrant either. It's, you know, it's like, I'm not, because I know lots of people here who are immigrants, and like, what I mean is that, you know, it just depends on, I'm basically just blaming the government mostly. But now you're talking about like political groups and stuff, and I mean, it's like the specter of, you know, neo-Nazism is kind of never far away in Europe, you know, and it often takes different sort of forms. I mean, the most recent one, I mean, maybe right, using the word Nazi here might be a bit strong for this group, because, well, it depends who you talk to, but there was it's a group that's been about, and they've gotten quite, well, bigger over Europe, called Pegida, if you want to call it that way. The full name of them is the Patriotic Europeans Against the Islamization of the Occident. So that's the big long version. But you get a lot of groups that are like this, and they run under the banner of sort of like anti-Islamification groups, is kind of what they call themselves. But you know, like, I've seen rallies in that with a lot of these groups, and there's a lot of hatred, and it's really quite disturbing to see, especially, you know, the amounts of people on the streets in places like Germany. But we'll talk a bit more about it after the break.
We'll be back.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. So much truth, it hurts.
Are you tired of your taxes funding endless occupations around the world? Antiwar.com is run by people who understand that wars abroad become wars at home, wars on our freedoms. Antiwar.com is dedicated to bringing you the latest in news, views, interviews, and reviews from the top movers and shakers in the anti-occupation movement. Antiwar.com has it all, from thorough foreign policy analysis to interviews with whistleblowers who used to run the military-industrial complex. Anti-war, pro-free market. That's antiwar.com.
Are you sick of peaceful people being locked away for victimless crimes? Instead of trying to get out of jury duty, consider taking it so you can do the right thing. A single juror with a conscience can send someone home to their family instead of to a jail cell. If there's no victim, how can there be a crime? And if the judge or prosecutor are keeping you in the dark, what are they trying to hide? You can vote your conscience instead of being a pawn of the state. For more information, Google jury nullification or check out the Fully Informed Jury Association at fija.org.
Freedom Fiends. We are back. This is Randy England, and I'm with Dan Green, my Scottish friend. Is that right, Dan? Is it correct to describe you as Scottish, or
yeah,
is it something
Scottish.
Else? Is that right?
I don't really sometimes like the term British.
Yeah, and I, you know, sometimes I don't know what to call somebody. Like, I'm an American, I guess. it's pretty easy, you know, for us. But if you were from Iceland, I think you're, are you an Icelander or, you know, it's different everywhere. It's kind of funny. I think even state legislatures come together to decide what they'll call people from their state, you know, like Delaware. What do they call them? Maybe someone from Delaware, if we took calls, could call in and say we call ourselves Delawenians or something. But anyway, we were talking about immigration, and I think you started to mention a lot of people, not you, but a lot of people in your part of the world, and I mean by Scotland or England, Europe, are very concerned about Muslim immigrants, and that you've got groups that are almost like neo-Nazis that are, you know, masquerade as it's more popular to be an anti-Islamic group than to be a Nazi, so they go by those names now, but that's, it's kind of big. And you know, how do you feel about those people? I mean, do they have any legitimate concerns at all?
Well, you know, it's one of those things where, like I said, I do know people who are actually, well, this actually came up in the Scottish independence referendum sort of thing, because I knew a friend of mine, and he was saying like, I'm worried because they want to cut the army way down if we became independent. He's like, and then you could have ISIS beheading people in the streets. He actually used that phrase, ISIS beheading people in the streets. And I don't know where he got this from, like, at all, like, but I mean, I don't think that's a genuine concern. I mean, as if, what are they going to do? Just show up? Was Scotland going to go independent, and then ISIS were just going to show up on the coast somewhere, and like England and all those other places were just not going to bother about it? I mean, it was a weird thing. But
if they're going to just break the law and commit murder, I mean, you already have laws for that, right?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, if someone's going to cut somebody's head off in the street, you know how to deal with that. I think exactly. you used to cut their head off, you know, in the square or something, but that's not the problem. I mean, the problem is, are not the ones that come and cut the heads off, but they're the ones that come in, take over Parliament, and make your wife wear a burqa, right? I mean, is that where they're coming from?
I see no one like that in either the Scottish Parliament or the one in England. I mean, it's like, what do you think? I mean, would they say, like, there's a massive population of Muslims in this country, and I think some people kind of view Islam as like one megalithic thing, but it's not at all. I mean, there's so many different branches and, you know, strains of thought within Islam, and that annoys me. And some people look at it as if it's just, you know, one big megalithic thing. But I mean, I don't see anyone, you know, standing up in any parliament saying, you know, we need to get all women in burqas. Nobody's saying that. Nobody would say that. You know, that's the thing. I think these, you know, it goes back to, it's like, you know, it's always the boogeyman, isn't it? You know, it used to be the Soviet Union, you know, and now it's ISIS or whatever they're called this week. And it's always something to keep people a bit scared, you know, like there's this fear that this could happen, you know. I mean, I remember there was some people in England who were, like, some train station, I think it was in London, handing out leaflets for ISIS ages ago. And, oh, some of the newspapers went crazy. They were like, these people are on our streets now and all this. And it's like, okay, they were just handing out leaflets, you know, they weren't exactly marching down the street, you know, like beheading people or anything like that. They were just passing out leaflets. I mean, as much as I disagree with what's in their leaflets, I wouldn't say you should ban them from handing out literature, you know.
And I think that's the end of our hour, isn't it?
I do believe
that's
it is.
That's just hour one. And we will be back after a break for another hour of the Freedom Fiends. We'll be right back.
afraid there's some squiskar squiggles from death clocks. And you're listening to the Freedom's Fiends on the, you know, the radios. And I guess I says worms now. So there you go.
Tired of those old Freedom Fiends buttons? Well, the Freedom Fiends have new button designs.
As always, it's only $10 for 10 buttons, and you'll get these nifty designs. Buy sheep, for sheep, on sheep.
State speech is hate speech.
Two designs for Guns and Weed, the Road to Freedom.
Three designs for Fiend Phone.
Bipcot No Gov.
A Freedom Fiends Worms button.
And Ask Me About My Worms.
Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says Buttons.
And now they're bigger buttons.
They used to be 1¼ inch, now they're 1¾ inch. Dan, they're bigger buttons.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network, a collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
Is the Freedom Fiends, a symposium of unsupervised sounds that caress your freedom fiend bone. I'm Randy England, and co-host Dan Green has hacked into the UK's MI5 subspace mind control to beam our pirate signal of protest directly to your frontal lobes. So lose the tinfoil hats and know that you are free. Hi, Dan.
Hello.
Hey, are we, you know, we've been talking about immigration and that, and perhaps we've beaten that long enough. I'm not sure, but I thought everything we talked about has been in immigration in a society where there's a state, where there's a border. And I wonder, would any of these problems exist, or how would these things be handled by at least by individuals or then their voluntary associations if tomorrow there was no Scotland, government of Scotland or the UK, and the idea of Scotland was more of a region than a place that had an exact property line on it? Would you see any of these problems still existing or not?
Oof, that's a tough question, because I think it's quite complex when you think about it. I mean, I think obviously people, I mean, it just depends, you know, people have this sort of nationalistic sort of feeling, you know, that kind of probably it never goes away. So, like, you know, you said it more of a region. If we take, you know, we could take the state away from it. I mean, the way I think it would probably be easier for free movement is because, I mean, if it depends what kind of post sort of state, you know, world I suppose we're looking at. But I mean, say everything is like regions are privately owned, then, you know, I could actually, you could see why it would, then people would be able to, you could see you could have a region like where maybe there is only all black people or all white people, you know, maybe it's private land and that's just what they want, you know, fair enough, you know. But I think I can't see a lot of places doing that, mm-hmm. because why would you? I mean, if everything's sort of private and you don't have to worry about the state or anything like that, then surely you would want to open yourself up to the rest of the world, to doing business with the rest of the world. I mean, I can't see why not, unless, you know, you want to have some kind of ideological sort of, you know, sort of let's all just have white people, you know. And I don't doubt some people would want to do that. I just think I don't see the point. I think it would be actually counterproductive.
But I'm thinking, I'm an immigrant. Let's say I'm a Romanian immigrant, not a vampire, nobody, but a Romanian immigrant, and I'm standing, you know, just outside the former border of Scotland, wanting to step across into the area, you know, of Scotland. And, you know, what problems am I going to face? I mean, I would think the first question that I'd want to know is, assuming I'm standing on a spot that someone in England is allowing me to stand on, perhaps I own the spot that I'm standing on in England. I'm not sure. But I'm going to step over, let us say, it's at least going to be a property line of some kind. If someone is going to own that land, and I'm going to have permission even to step onto that land. Would that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Now, yeah. if it's a road, then it's probably going to be, well, it's either going to be completely private and there'll be a gate and I won't be allowed to drive on the road, or it's going to be a private road that is has some other setup that would allow people to go on it, like a toll road. And you know that if you went up and paid your money, you'd be allowed to drive on into Scotland on that road. And or if it wasn't a toll road, maybe you'd get to the end of the toll road and you'd get off at the exit, and there's a town, and the town has what, a business district, and then you find out that all of the roads in the business district are perfectly free and inviting for you to come on and drive on downtown because they'd like you to stop and spend some money. So you find out that you're welcome on the toll roads because you pay the toll. You're welcome in the business district because they want you your business there. I wonder at some point, but at every point you have to know where you're going or where you can go. But in one sense, it's not that different from the way it is now. I mean, if you crossed into the United States from Mexico, and we didn't have a border, it was just, you know, just from one area to another, you could probably find a road to come in on. But by the time you got to, you know, got that evening and needed a place to stay, you'd have to rent a room, or you would have to find someone who was willing to put you up, you know, maybe for nothing, or feed you. You'd have to, if you wanted to eat, you'd have to go to a restaurant. I don't know if it's that different. I'm thinking it's the only difference is that now we have an absolute line that you cannot cross, and the government is there to enforce it. And I certainly think that if they took away all the borders at once, there'd probably be some big shifts in population, wouldn't you think?
I think there would be. And what's interesting there when you say that is because you're saying, like, you know, I would have to go somewhere, I would have to, you know, pay to rent a room, pay to use the roads, I would have to do this. What you're saying there is, this is what I think probably the difference could be. What you're saying is it's your responsibility wherever you go to get there to support yourself, whereas when we have states and things and people accessing welfare and, you know, national health services and all this kinds of thing, it ends up being other people that pay for these things who are being forced to pay for it, whereas if there wasn't states in that way and, you know, everything was private, it's down to you. You know, you want that room, you pay for it yourself. You know, you want to drive in that road, you pay for it. So it gives you the personal responsibility, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, and I mean, not to say that there wouldn't be, you know, charitable organizations, and you know there would be churches with soup kitchens or homeless shelters. I mean, I don't. Do you have the Salvation Army over there?
Yeah, we do. Yeah,
you must have it. I think it came from there. Well, we have it all over here. The Salvation Army, and they run shelters where they house people that are homeless, and it's just a charitable thing. Now, I don't know, I couldn't tell you whether they get government money or not. I mean, so many charities over here now do get government money, you're not quite sure if you're dealing with a private or a government entity. But we do have private charities, and there would be such places, I'm sure. There are generous people, whether you have a state or not. In fact, I personally think that if the government didn't steal, you know, 40% of your income in taxes, you might be able to afford to be a bit more generous than you already are. because, you know, we have to take care of our basic needs before we can, you know, help your fellow man, and that might be easier if the government didn't drain it out, you know, from the start. But I don't know. I think it, there would be a lot of things that would be very similar, but it might be, I was mentioning that there would be massive shifts. Well, I don't know, massive, but there would sure be shifts in population, so that areas that, say, needed workers would have there'd be a big flow of people from places where people didn't have work into areas that needed workers. And if a person knew that they could get a job when they went somewhere, oh, heck yeah, and thought they could better their life by doing it, they'd be there in a flash. But that would only happen, you know, it's kind of like the water above and below the dam. You know, it equalizes at some point. And there's an inflow of population, it would take the jobs. And once it equalized out, people would stop coming. They wouldn't just keep flowing in. And so, you know, suddenly everybody on Earth lived inside the former borders of the United States. I mean, that's just not going to happen. And so you don't have to worry about it, because at some point somebody's going to be walking back across the border, or the former border, back into Mexico saying, don't go up there, there's no jobs. And I heard there's more jobs, you know, in South America or something, so they walk the other way. That's gonna just be a natural flow, instead of the completely artificial and arbitrary system that's set up now. And I can't, other than the initial, you know, what do you want to call it? You know, the turmoil and things that come from any change, I would think that it would sort itself out pretty quickly, and then nobody would care. Of course, I don't know how big, you know, terrorism, you know, if that's a big buzzword where you are. But, of course, in the United States, you know, one of the biggest reason for, you know, being, you know, Nazi-like at the borders is because they're supposed to be stopping terrorists. And, you know, I think it's baloney to begin with. But assuming that it isn't baloney, if we did not have the state, these, you know, terrorists, imaginary or not, would completely dry up. I mean, if the United States did not have armies all around the world, and you in the UK, you know, have a lot of sins to be forgiven for, too, in that count. If we didn't have, you know, people all around the world with guns bossing people around, there might be fewer people that were trying to come over here and kill us. Mm-hmm. And not that there's that many trying to come over and kill us, but I'm thinking there wouldn't be any. It wouldn't be worth crossing an ocean to kill me if I hadn't done anything to wrong you.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, absolutely. And that's another thing kind of we have here. I mean, you have you have, like, refugees from countries that, you know, the British government have, you know, bombed the you-know-what out of, you know, and they're basically these people, you know, they can't stay in the country they're in. You know, it's destabilized because, you know, for some, you know, for whatever reason, you know, they decided to bomb it. And that's the thing. So then it gets harder to say to those people, no, you can't come here. I mean, you can't say, yeah, we destabilized your country and, you know, you're trying to seek asylum because of us. So, you know, of course you can't come and live here. You know, that's an awful sort of, you can't turn around and say something like that, but that's the case. So even by all these ridiculous wars, they're actually they're inviting people to come here to get away from the mess they've created.
Well, we can't do that in the United States, because that would be too many people.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum.
This show survives on donations from fiends like you. We put that money back into our show and Liberty Outreach, and donate most our ad space to Liberty organizations that make a difference. We're also a teaching hospital, educating the next generation of Liberty Talkers on the skills needed to keep the radio flame of truth burning into the future. Put your money where your heart is and make a donation of any amount to the Freedom Fiends. Please go to freedomfiends.com and click on the spinning coin on any post.
that was. Freedom Fiends, Dan Green and Randy England, and what sounded like a small child. Oddly. So we've been talking a lot about immigration, pretty much the whole show. And it's a wide open topic, and there's a lot of debate, and it is something that libertarians sort of argue about. But Randy, you were talking to me a little bit in the break about how this sort of leads us naturally, I suppose, into the topic of, you know, property rights in general.
Well, it really does. And if we're, the last thing we were talking about was, well, what would happen? How would immigration be affected if, you know, the state disappeared tomorrow for some reason or another? And, you know, that's really, it's really a property issue, because everybody has to stand somewhere unless they're in an airplane, I suppose, or something. And, you have to have the right to stand where you're standing, or you're a trespasser and somebody's liable to come up and move you from wherever you are. But the property rights that would happen in a free society, I mean, so much would change. Even something as simple as
Randy. 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 Just in case I'm still on the air, which most likely I am, I seem to have lost Randy. Randy was having some trouble with his internet earlier on, but he's obviously having an issue again. So we'll just keep talking, as always. Randy's been having some internet problems. So I suppose we're still on this we're going to expand probably more on the property rights thing, because it's one of those things that libertarians love to fight about. So we're probably going to have to bring it in. But while I have you here for some late night personal radio with just Dan, this is what I have to do when I'm abandoned by my co-host because of the internet. The software we're talking over is actually called Beanphone. It's been developed especially for this kind of purpose. I should mention Randy's not dropped out because of Fiendphone. It's an internet issue. You can actually go to fiendphone.com, FEENPHONE.com. It's a higher quality, basically a higher quality alternative to, you know, things like Skype and Google Hangouts. It's much better sound quality. I had to stop using Skype because I was having a lot of problems personally with it, but I think Fiendphone's a lot easier. I suppose at this point I should check. Can anyone tell me if I'm actually still on the air or if I'm just sitting talking about Fiendphone? Oh, good. Yes, hello. Oh, lovely. Sometimes you just got to check, because otherwise I could have just been sitting here in my house talking to myself. We should get Randy back. We'll see what happens, you know, to the next break. We'll see if he comes back or not. I know he was having problems with his internet. It's just one of them things. So, I should also mention at this point, because I don't think we actually mentioned it when we came back in at the start of this hour, Freedom Fiends is covered by a BIPCOT no government license, and that allows reuse by anyone, basically, except for governments. You can learn more at BIPCOT.org. I know it sounds like I'm just basically doing the adverts to stall for time, and I suppose in a way I am, but it's important to mention the BIPCOT license. I kind of every hour, because some stations only pick up 1 hour of the show, and it's basically a more fun alternative to the Creative Commons license, because Creative Commons is so boring and square now, because it basically allows us to shame, you know, anyone can reuse any of the stuff that's covered by the BIPCOT license, except for government agents, basically.
Fiendphone.
Ooh, hey, Dan.
Fiendphone coming. Hi, Randy.
I'm here.
Randy's
you
back.
Lost me. And you'll have to catch me up on the conversation, because I was off for a bit, and I apologize sincerely from the bottom of my heart and from the ineffectiveness of my internet connection.
So, Randy, I was just talking a bit about Fiendphone and BIPCOT, you know. It's okay.
The Fiend just... phone. Well, yep. This...
We'll pick it up again after the break where we left off.
We'll be back.
You're listening to The Freedom Fiends, an invigorating alternative to those other shows.
Are you sick of government lackeys who say, you didn't build that? Are you tired of elitists like Barack Obama and Al Gore taking credit for the web while trying to take over the web? Are you disgusted by experts whose concept of the internet is that it's a series of tubes? Take back the free market of computing by encouraging software developers to adopt the BIPCOT NoGov license. The BIPCOT NoGov license allows any use or modification except by governments. Go to BIPCOT.org. That's Bravo, India, Papa, Charlie, Oscar, Tango.org.
Freedom Fiends, Dan Green and Randy England is back. We found him. We thought the government had seized him and it was all over for Randy. But Randy, you're back and you're safe. Are you safe?
I am back. I think that I'm safe, but they never know when they may come back, you know. It's I don't know how safe I am, but it'll be all right. I think before I was so removed from the internet or whatever it was. Wait a minute. Okay, I'm all right. We were talking about inheritance, if I remember right. And when you die now and you live in a state, the state pretty well controls what happens to your property if you don't have a will or don't have an estate plan made up, a trust as they're called. And the state will take your property and they'll give it, you know, they'll divide it up among your relatives, basically. If you're married, you know, your wife will get some or all, and your kids will get some. And if you're not married, but you have kids, your kids will probably get it all. And if you don't have a wife and you don't have any kids, they'll divide it up among your other relatives some way until it reaches a point where they don't give it anymore. They say, well, if it gets this far enough away before we give it to your fourth cousin, we'll just take it, and the government gets all your property. And that's the way that the law usually runs. It runs that way in the United States. I'm not sure how it is there, but at some point, it always goes back to the state. It's not like we get down and even we can't find any relatives of all of yours, we'll give it to the Children's Mercy Hospital or something. No, that never, ever, ever happens. It's that it goes to the government. And, the question that comes up, I think, is, well, what would happen in a stateless society where there was no government who was saying who got what if you didn't have a will when you died, and no government there with its hands out to take whatever you've got when you died? And so I guess what I would wonder about is that if I died and did not have any heirs of any kind, and there wasn't a government here to steal my property before I was even cold, what would happen to my stuff? What would you think should happen to my stuff, Dan?
That's such an interesting question, isn't it? I mean, I suppose kind of, I don't know why, but one of the things that I kept thinking of is if you didn't have anyone to give it to, then I know this might sound sort of, I don't know, but like maybe the person, like say you own a house on a street and there's really no one to give it to, then would it not really go back to maybe the person that owns the street? But then, I don't know, maybe did they own the neighborhood or did they just own the street? Or,
well, let's assume that the street is owned by the people that live on it. And okay, technically, I own the bit of my street that fronts my house out to the middle of the road. My neighbor across the street owns out in front of his house out to the middle of the road. And we have some sort of agreement together, a homeowners association, that we all pitch in together to maintain the street, per se. So the street really isn't an issue. And what about, you know, everybody's familiar with the, you know, the idea of the original origin of property, that if you come to unowned land, the first person to occupy it or perhaps improve it or mix their labor with the land becomes the owner of the property, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, you know, that could be how you would decide who it was. The first person to come and actually squat on the land and use it would be the new owner.
But then what if that person's dead?
What if what person is dead?
The person that originally came across the land and built the house, you know, and then maybe sold it to someone else. You see what I mean? Like,
well, no, I'm
revert back to the original person who first mixed his labor with that piece of land.
Well, he wouldn't have any rights in the land. Let's say I bought it. Let's say I bought the land from the guy that originally improved the land and built the house on it. Okay.
Okay.
And we had a contract, and I said I will give you X dollars, and you will give me all rights to this land forever. Okay?
Okay.
I mean, you give up all your rights is what I would be asking you to do. If I give you this money, you give up all rights, you walk away, I don't want to see you again. Okay?
Yeah.
So I'm thinking when I die, my death is not going to generate any rights for that guy. I mean, he's out.
Mm-hmm.
But if somebody else comes along at that point and I'm dead, and it could be the guy I bought the house from, okay? Mm-hmm. He has just as much right to the house as you know, 6 billion other people walking around, which while I'm alive is no right to the house. But when I'm dead, perhaps they all have an equal right to come and acquire rights to the house by occupying the land and using it.
Mm-hmm. And interesting. We'll say as well, like, well, if you said maybe they have like a sort of homeowners association, like with the street and stuff, with say the other residents in the street, then would, if it's in their interest, would they, I mean, it would make sense that they would want to have some kind of, you know, property right, look, they would have some kind of major interest, obviously, in what happens to the house. But, you know, could some agreement be made amongst them that if there's, you know, nobody to take it, it maybe goes to the, say, the local neighborhood, whatever it is?
Of course, you could have that you sign something that unless you leave your property to a specific heir, it will belong to the homeowners association after that. And then I assume the homeowners association would probably sell it and use the proceeds so that nobody in the homeowners association ever had to pay dues again, something like that. But of course, you could have an agreement like that. But here's the thing, though, that I guess I was leaving out, not on purpose, but if you didn't have a state, you wouldn't even have a state telling you that, say, your children should get your land when you die. I mean, you could have a will or some sort of contract or agreement that your children would get your property when you die. But let's say you're a rather negligent fellow, or the Grim Reaper came for you a little sooner than you expected, and you did not leave anything to your children. There's no state to take the property and give it to your children under the state's rules, which is what would happen in most countries today. Mm-hmm. And instead, if the only rule was the homesteading rule, you know, the squatter's rule, that unabandoned property, and of course dying is the ultimate abandonment of this earth, abandoned property or unowned property, and a property would become unowned at that point, belongs to the first person to come along and use it. Mm-hmm. That would kind of make I think people would be unhappy with a result like that. Some guy came up and knocked on your door, and you came, you know, and say he was just some shoe salesman, and he knocked on your door, and you opened the door, and after you opened the door, you had a heart attack, died on the spot, and then he comes in and fixes himself dinner, And pretty soon your kids come over to visit you, and they come in to the house, and here's a shoe salesman who claims now that he has he now owns the property because dad died, and he's there claiming it, and he's using it. As a matter of fact, he's already eaten some of the food, and claims dad's property for his own. I mean, that's a guy who's probably cruising for a beating at that point, and I don't know if, you know, people would stand for a claim like that. I think it's kind of interesting, but it's the logical upshot of the homesteading rule.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Like, because you'd think, yeah, let me go to a claim, but I don't think people would stand for that at all. I mean, there's the other kind of thing when you think about it as well, that say we're thinking of a world with no states and there's more regions. I mean, maybe the rules in said regions might differ for depending on where like it kind of does now, you know, depends on where you are, depending on what happens. I mean, you maybe could live in a sort of area where there's private, say, dispute resolution organizations that all have, say, agreements with each other, that there's certain things that happen when, you know, one of their customers dies, you know, in regards to their estate. You know, I think a lot of this would probably be, that's why we can't, I mean, we can, you know, speculate a little bit, but we'll never know properly, well, you know, obviously, but it's because, like, it's agreements, you know, like, I imagine there would be, you know, these things might be kind of rocky at first, but then agreements would start to take place, and then, you know, like, once agreements and that take place and things are in a more standard way, I think people would, you know, start to fall into sort of models. But I think it would probably vary depending on where you are. But I mean, I suppose it varies now depending on where you are. I mean, I don't think you guys even have inheritance tax in the US, which we have here.
Oh, we do. We do have it.
Oh, do you?
But it doesn't kick in until, I think it kicks in at about $5 million. So you can inherit up to that much before they start stealing it. You're so right, I think, about the way places would be different. And this thing about, you know, who gets your house, your kids or the shoe salesman that just stopped by. As long as this wasn't solved by violence, and I didn't mean to suggest that it should be, but only could be, it might be more likely to be solved by taking it to arbitration, taking it to a private court. But that's still going to depend on what the community consensus is to that. And there, you know, people would have to decide whether it was going to be one way or the other. But it is kind of tough, you know, to say who exactly gets it. I mean, to say, oh, well, your relatives should get your stuff. Well, that's a recipe for disaster, because which relatives? You know, yeah. I mean, the state law, as bad as the state is, at least it tells you who gets your stuff. If you die and you've got a wife and children, it says the wife gets half, the kids get half, but your greedy brother that you don't like, he didn't get anything. Well, the law is pretty clear about that. I don't know how they would sort it out, you know, to be that clear in a stateless society, but we would have to. And maybe it would just be just super necessary. This would never happen or almost never happen, because people would be more responsible and leave wills and trusts and contracts to settle these things.
Yeah.
Well, it's time to go back to the market and then back for our last segment.
Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean. This is what radio sounds like now.
For some reason in this country, and in most of the Western world, it's okay to just judge.
Hey, this is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends radio show. Computer programmer Derek Slopey and I have created Fiend Phone. I'm using Fiend Phone right now to talk with and record one of my co-hosts in real time. Take it, Davi.
Hey, this is Davi Barker, and I'm 1,000 miles away from Michael, but we sound like we're in the same room.
We sure do, Davi. So, Davi, please tell the nice people more about FiendPhone.
FiendPhone is free, no-gov software that opens up a global world of possibilities for collaborative, high-quality, remote voice media production, and I'm digging it.
People can try FiendPhone right now at FiendPhone.com, but we're also raising money to vastly improve FiendPhone and vastly improve independent talk media worldwide.
So go to FiendPhone.com to help out. Who will build the audio roads? We will, with your help.
That's fiendphone.com, FiendPhone.com. Foxtrot, Echo, Echo, November, phone.com.
Fiendphone, I never knew remote audio could be this good.
Gun Training with the Non-Aggression Principle, Volume 1. Basic Handgun and Rifle with Jared Waltz.
First rule of being alive is you own yourself.
A groundbreaking approach to firearms and self-defense training. Beautifully filmed and easy to understand instructions make this one a must-have. Gun Training with the Non-Aggression Principle, Volume 1. New DVD from Michael W. Dean, available on Amazon.
Your house is your property.
Hey, this is Nathan Explosion from Death Clock, and you're listening to Freedom Fiends on the radio. Worms.
Been talking about, I guess, sort of property rights and what things might be like if we ever did not have a state to decide all of these issues for us and what should happen and one wasn't. And one that came up a little bit in the break, and maybe it's biting off too much to chew in the time that we have left, but I asked Dan if he thought we would have capital punishment, the death penalty for certain crimes or aggressions or something in a free society, and whether that would be doable, whether it would be moral, whether you would even have the right to do that under the non-aggression principle, which of course, says that no one may initiate violence against another person. What do you think, Dan?
I mean, again, there you could say that if it was someone, then, who's, say, maybe murdered someone, then they've already committed violence first. I mean, the way I've heard, I'm not in favour of the death penalty, but I've heard the way some people sort of justify it to me this is a fair enough argument. They say, well, murder is the taking of an innocent life, and we've deemed this person not to be innocent. Fair enough. But I think, again, if we're talking about how this would play out, I mean, it would probably be the case of, we're sort of talking, I suppose, here from kind of libertarian arguments and these kind of, would this give you the right to do this and this? But I mean, again, it would probably vary widely in a stateless world, and I don't think everyone would maybe have the same, would approach it the same sort of logical way maybe as we are doing.
So it might be different in different places.
As it is now, but I think it probably would be, because I could envision in a stateless world you would have all sorts of really places that couldn't exist now, kinds of societies. And it would be, it'd be interesting to see, but I imagine it would, I don't imagine everyone would maybe sort of come from our sort of, maybe our, the logical way we're approaching it, if you know what I mean.
Well, maybe could you still ship the murderers to Australia? I assume UK's not doing that anymore, right?
Not anymore.
One of the arguments that a lot of libertarians make against the death penalty, though, is that it's just a huge abuse of state power, and they're totally uncomfortable with giving that power to an organization as corrupt as the state. But when you make that argument, you're leaving the door open that, well, yeah, but if we didn't have the corrupt state, maybe we would have it. The one thing that comes to mind to me is that the state is huge, and the state steals so much money that it can actually afford to build cages for every person that is too dangerous to be allowed to walk the earth. And if we had a small society where everything was funded voluntarily, would that be a problem? Because could we afford to keep the true mad dog killers in prison where they wouldn't hurt somebody. Do we have the right to imprison them? I think that we have the right to protect ourselves. And whether that means locking them up or shooting them to the moon or Australia, or it means killing them, it really has to mean one of those things if the person is truly dangerous. And if you don't do one of those things, there will be plenty of people out there that will get the job done for you, and they will kill them. If the society doesn't have a consensus on what should be done with the truly dangerous. I mean, there's plenty of examples where the state has failed in its job of putting really dangerous people away, and people take it into their own hands. So it's kind of an issue that we sure don't have time to finish up with tonight, because I think I'm hearing the closing music from Michael's illustrious band coming upon us. But perhaps next time we can figure out what to do with those thorny guys. Dan, it's been great being with you tonight. Sorry I had to step out for a few minutes. That was not like me, and I try never to do that again.
That's okay. I forgive you. It's okay.
Thank you. I appreciate it. And I hope we'll be on again, and you need to bring your wife one of these times, too.
Absolutely.
Katie. I say that right, or are you not supposed to pronounce the T?
No, it's okay.
Okay, good. I got it. Good night.